Exodus 22, I used to read the Law of Moses years ago and think, yeah, that's all over and done now. But I love reading it now. I love studying it because you see here the mind of God reflected. Even though these laws are not directly relevant to us anymore because they've been replaced by the new covenant, you still see the mind of God. So, for example, verse 1, if somebody steals an ox or a sheep and kills a sellot, he's got to pay 5 oxen for an ox, etc. The Mosaic law has no concept really of prisons or custodial sentence, even though that was practiced in the surrounding world. You think of Joseph being in prison in Egypt. God wants issues to be decided immediately, forgiven, resolved, play on. Either that or the death sentence. The Law of Moses continually reflects that. And that is wisdom for us. And a lot of conflict that goes on between families, between individuals, between churches, etc., is because of this refusal to immediately resolve. And it drags on, and people get more and more entrenched in their perceptions and in their positions. Verse 2, if a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt of bloodshed for him. I go really with the Good News here, the Good News Bible. If a thief is caught breaking into a house at night and is killed, the one who killed him isn't guilty of murder. But if it happens during the day, he is guilty of murder. I take that to mean that if someone's breaking into your house and in hot blood you go and engage the bloke and kill him, well, okay, that's not murder. So this verse says, but if you catch him breaking into your house and chase him away, and then you're burning with anger and go around in the morning of the next day, find the guy and kill him, then it is. I think that that shows that God is more lenient to sins of hot blood than premeditated sins. Now, this is not to say that, you don't have to worry about what you do in hot blood, so it is. No. Sin is sin, and yet there clearly are grades of sin. There certainly are degrees of sin. The fact that there's a sin unto death and a sin not unto death, John says, is evidence enough, and the different types of sacrifices and penalties for sin that were levied under the Law of Moses, I think indicates that. Well, we cannot take comfort ourselves that, I did that in hot blood, so be it. Because restraint and self-control in the heat of the moment is still a fundamental part of our Christian calling. But I think when it comes to responding to the failures of others, I think that we have to bear this in mind. Very often it's said, do you know what he said? Do you know what she did? Yeah, he may have said that and she may have done that in hot blood. And God cut people a bit of slack for that. I mean, the highest standard here is if you find someone breaking into your house, Jesus said, turn the other cheek. Don't go for him and kill the bloke. But, okay, if people's hot blood gets on top of them and that's what they do, I think you see God here cutting a difference between types of sin. And it's a difficult issue, isn't it? But I raise it so you can think about it. Towards our showing grace to people who fail in hot blood, as we all do. Verse 5. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be eaten by letting his animal loose and grazing in another man's field, he's got to make restitution. So there was to be no excuse that, well, I didn't steal anything out of your vineyard or out of your field. My animal did. I'll punish my animal. Now, the animal, of course, has diminished responsibility. The animal is just an animal. We are not to manipulate others who have diminished responsibility, like the animal in this case, and then claim, I did nothing wrong. I didn't eat anything out of your field or vineyard. My animal did. This sort of manipulation, this kind of sort of sinning by proxy, is probably the abiding sin of our age. Not to do it yourself, but to indirectly use others in some way. Well, verse 6, if a fire breaks out or gets out of control, I think the idea of the Hebrew is, on your property, it burns beyond the intended area, and it catches some thorns on fire, and ends up burning up somebody else's harvested grain in a time of harvest, then you're guilty. So I think the principle is that we may unintentionally begin something which then ignites a third party, in this case the thorns, and then causes huge damage. So the fire in the standing grain had in fact been kindled by the man who first kindled the fire on his own territory. He didn't intend purposefully to burn up the other guy's territory, but because of his own inattention on his own territory, well, that's what happened. The principle is that what we begin can have huge repercussions when it spreads through a third party. And we've got to bear some of the responsibility for that. So often you see a relationship breakdown between two people, maybe within their own home, ignites another person who spreads that breakdown on a massive scale with huge damage. And that's how a lot of church divisions and arguments come about. Two people fall out, say hard things about each other, to each other, someone else hears them having a row, and then that person goes and gossips it, and whoosh, it's all over the place in distorted forms, and you end up with mass destruction. That's the principle. And all right, the people who started it between themselves on their own territory, as it were, have got some responsibility. I think that's the point, because this is the nature of things, that things spread out of control, even if it's a disagreement between two people. Verse 7, if somebody steals something and the thief is found, he's got to pay back double. Well, Luke 19, verse 8, Zacchaeus paid back four times what he had stolen. So God's law was not a chain, because like man is not a dog. It was not a leash to sort of restrain man who wants to run free. Instead, I would say the law of Moses was, and all divine law, is a springboard to a deeper obedience and spirituality. That law should not inculcate sort of a spirit of minimalism, that, okay, so I got busted for stealing your thing, I'll give you double. No, Zacchaeus offered himself to give back four times. If you perceive the principle, the spirit behind these laws, you won't follow the letter of the law, you will go far more. So, 25, if you lend money to any of God's people, you mustn't charge interest. Well, you think of the Lord's parable in Matthew 25. He says to the one talent man, look, why didn't you lend out my money for interest? Now, Jesus was speaking to Jewish people under the law of Moses. I think what he's saying is, look, you should have done at least something with what I gave you. Instead, you did nothing with it. You hid my talent, and it's the same word, hiding, that's used about actually preserving the faith. And I do wonder whether there's not a foresight there by the Lord as to how some will think, well, I was given a statement of faith when I got baptized, and all I've got to do is to hold on to that set of understandings till I die, and I, well, hopefully I might get saved. No, that's hiding your talent in the earth. We are to do at least something, even if it is not ideal. He said, why didn't you lend my money out for interest? Of course, he could have been meaning, well, why didn't you give it to the Gentiles? Because that was not forbidden to lend money to Gentiles. Here it is specifically forbidden to lend money to your brethren. In other words, you should have taken the gospel to other people, to the Gentiles. That could be one reading. But I think, as I say, that the Lord was speaking within a Jewish context, and I think that he was saying that you should have done something, even if it infringed God's law. You should have done something and I would have accepted you. And that is the thing, that we are to do at least something. She has done what she could, the Lord said about the woman who poured her expensive perfume upon him, to do at least something. And we can all get up this day and go out and do at least something.